Hello everyone, and welcome back to the History of Scotland, episode 18, The True Story of Macbeth. First thing, I'd like to say thank you to all the kind reviews we are getting on Spotify at the moment. Currently rating really highly, and we are number one search for Scottish history podcasts across the platform. Not going to lie, I never suspected reaching such a feat, so thank you to everyone for your continued support. Second thing about episode lengths. Now, I know each episode so far has been reaching around the 30 minute mark. I want to try and consolidate that down to 20 to 25 minutes, allowing us to split up the episodes more and not overload you all with too much history, if there ever is such a thing. Let me know your thoughts on this via an email if you object or agree to it. So, last week we carried on with our story. After Malcolm II died, his grandson Duncan I came to the throne, starting a new dynasty in Scottish history, the House of Dunkeld. We left Duncan I just as he was betrayed and dying to Macbeth, the new king of both the north of Scotland and the Kingdom of Alba, joining together the north of Moray and the lands of the Kingdom of Alba under one house and one rule, which is now pretty much most of Scotland under his rule. Macbeth is one of those historical figures that we really see transformed by Shakespeare into a greater than life figure. In other words, his real life story is not filled with so much grandeur and intrigue as one might suspect. In reality, it was one of a general revolt against the merging of two kingdoms, Macbeth's kingdom being the Kingdom of Moray, or the Earldom of Moray, and Duncan I's kingdom being the Kingdom of Alba. Macbeth submitted to Malcolm II and then Duncan I, recognising both rulers as his overlords, but due to the failed invasion of Northumbria and the major battles Duncan I lost, Macbeth saw and took his chances becoming the new king of both areas. So, let's take a look at the real Macbeth today and discuss his entire life from start to finish. Next week we can then look at the story that was created by Shakespeare. But for now, let's go ahead and jump straight into the history. Macbeth, King of Scotland, ruled a peaceful kingdom from 1040 to 1057, considered by many historians as the last of the Gaelic kings of Scotland. Macbeth has become less of a historical figure and more of a fictional character, at the hands of the latter chroniclers, mostly English, and ultimately by the pen of William Shakespeare. Macbeth changed into a despicable ruler, a far cry from the real person. Macbeth MacFindlich was born in 1005 AD, the same year his grandfather became king. His father, Findlich MacRundrick, controlled the province of Moray as a Mormer. His mother, Doda, was the second daughter of Malcolm II, or, as we referred in the last episodes, one that we suspect was related to Malcolm II, meaning son of life in Gaelic. Although it's not certain he was related to Malcolm II's line of family, we did discuss in last week's episode that there was a weird coincidence between the families, and there probably is some relation. I mean, we're talking about the Dark Ages and the medieval times here. A lot of intermarriage relations happened, and a lot of families were really related to each other by old marriages to new marriages. So, when we look at him, he was a liberal king, fair, yellow hair and tall, ruddy countenance. At the age of 7, Macbeth was sent away to be educated, a requirement for the children of the important chieftains under the tutelage of a Christian monk, as set by law. The term of study usually lasted about 10 years. In 1020, at the age of 15, his cousins, or what we suspect as his cousins, Malcolm II and his entourage killed Macbeth's father, as we told in the last week's episode. And the reason escaped history, but it could have been that Macbeth's father had established a warm relationship with the House of Anfal. As for Macbeth, not much is known about him at this time. It is possible he was far away in his studies. Macbeth reappears once again in the Chronicles around the year 1032 AD, when elected Mormer of Moray upon his cousin's death. After being elected Mormer, he married the cousin's widow, Gruach, and adopted her son, Lulach. Even though his cousin died on a raid on his castle, ordered by Malcolm II, Macbeth now became a candidate to the kingship. Scarcely 2 years later, his candidacy was legitimised when Malcolm II, at the age of 80, passed away of natural causes on November the 25th, 1034 AD. 1 month later, on Christmas Day, Duncan I, whom Malcolm had previously named his successor, was elected High King and at the age of 33, thus following the lines of Kenneth III's rules of kingship. Duncan ruled for 6 uneasy years. His thirst for power, coupled with incompetence in the battlefield, resulted in troubled times for Scotland. His merging of the Kingdom of Moray, for example, with the Kingdom of Alba, following Malcolm II's wishes, troubled Macbeth and caused a lot of infighting between the families. An example of Duncan's incompetence that ultimately led to his downfall occurred in 1038 AD when the Earl of Northumbria attacked southern Scotland. The attack was arrested, but the chieftains prevailed on Duncan to counterattack. He also wanted to invade the Orkneys and bring them under his rule. Over everyone's objections, he chose to do both. In 1040, he opened two fronts, sending his nephew, Madan, to the Orkneys, while himself leading a force south into Scotland. Duncan's cavalry attempted an assault on the fortified city of Durham, as we spoke about in last week's episode, and was nearly annihilated. The Northumbrians mounted a counteraction and routed the rest of the army. While the fleeing north in disorder, he met his nephew, who he told him about his defeat in the Orkneys. Gathering the remaining clans, they advanced north, Duncan by sea and Madan by land. The result was a defeat at the hand of the Mormer of Orkney, Thorin Sigurdsson. Modan died in the attack, his cousin, and on August 14th, 1040, the king's army confronted the Mormer's army. It is believed that Macbeth, as a Mormer of Moray, allied himself with Sigurdsson. The Mormers defeated the king, with Duncan falling in battle, contrary to Shakespeare's play where Macbeth murders the king. Later that month, Macbeth entered Scone, the Scottish capital, leading the victorious army. To the foremost citizens of the capital, he presented himself as candidate to the throne. Now, this is slightly different than last week's tale. Although it was told last week's episode that Macbeth himself was the only person that defeated Duncan I, here we see a difference in the tale. Again, it's very hard to put an exact stamp and an exact historical stamp on the truth of these stories. In this story, it differs. This time, we are met by a Thorin Sigurdsson, who is also the Mormer of Orkney, and he allies himself with Macbeth to take on Duncan I. Obviously, Macbeth is wanting to side with Sigurdsson, hoping to defeat Duncan I and take his throne to join both the Kingdom of Moray, or the Mormer of Moray, and the Kingdom of Alba. So there's a bit of intrigue going on there, and it isn't just Macbeth leading it by himself. And there isn't really any mention of Macbeth's submission to Duncan I, but we can really submit that Macbeth at some point did submit to Malcolm II and then Duncan I, which really did mean this was a bit of a rebellion, but also one of keeping independence for these areas. Macbeth, at the age of 35, was crowned King of Alba, or known in this time as well, High King of Scotland. The overthrow of Duncan was the overthrow of an unpopular king, having intentions of expanding into England and the Orkney Kingdom, again owned by Thorin Sigurdsson. Contemporary chroniclers did not write favourably of Duncan, viewing him as a tyrant and an oppressor. They believed that by choosing Macbeth, Scotland had changed to a better rule, an opinion Shakespeare and later writers did not share. For the most part, Macbeth ruled a relatively peaceful and prosperous kingdom of Alba. He and his wife, Gruach, were particularly generous to the church, especially to the monastery of Loch Leven in Kinross. Credited with decreeing several good laws, Macbeth also enforced a traditional Celtic oath, whereby his officers swore to defend women and orphans anywhere in the kingdom. Another law enacted under his reign allowed daughters the same rights of inheritance as sons. The only domestic disruption during Macbeth's reign occurred in 1045. If we just pause for a minute, and we'll jump on that 1045 issue in a second. The lands that now Macbeth ruled was both the Kingdom of Albert and the lands controlling most of Scotland, and now the north of Scotland, Moray, the Mormor Moray, the Earl of Moray, the Kingdom Moray. It's very hard to understand what we classify it as. Was it an earldom? Was it a kingdom? Was it a Mormor? Whatever it was now under the control of the Kingdom of Albert. And therefore, going forward throughout history, the lands of Scotland that we know of today is being pretty much formed. Other than the Orkney Islands that stayed relatively independent for quite a bit of time, these lands that we know of Scotland today are now under control. Now, yes, the Kingdom of Strathclyde, which joined the kingdom earlier in the episodes, has a lot of land in Cumbria, and that's going to be of a bit of contest with England, and obviously Scotland will eventually lose that to England, but that's for a future tale and a future story. If we jump back to 1045, raising some of the southern clans, the Abbot of Dunkeld and the Mormor of Athol met the king in battle near Dunkeld. After a brief engagement, the rebels were defeated and the Mormor killed in the action. Scotland enjoyed 9 years of peace, giving Macbeth the opportunity to make a pilgrimage to Rome. This is a separate pilgrimage, the one that we mentioned where Malcolm went and submitted. Well, didn't submit to Cnut, but kind of did and didn't submit to Cnut. Macbeth wasn't meant to be there as well and submitted to Malcolm II. So this is really what we're going to class as the second true pilgrimage to Rome by himself. Anyway, there he met the Pope and gave alms to the poor as befitting a head of state. After his return from Rome, the political problems of England began affecting his realm. In 1052, Normans fleeing the chaotic situation in England fled north and were welcome in Macbeth's court. By Celtic law and custom, all travellers were always given haven. However, this act of kindness occurred the resentment of powerful English lords. About this time, Duncan's the first son, Malcolm Canmore, aged 21 and living in the English court, began making claims to the throne of Scotland. For the first time, he found more than a passing interest among the nobles. 2 years later, Malcolm, who would be later known as Malcolm III, Malcolm Canmore, had proved his case so successfully that the support for his invasion plans finally resulted in action. Edward, Earl of Northumbria, took command of the invading army. In the late summer of 1054 AD, Malcolm accompanied the Earl as they invaded the southern provinces of Scotland. Little resistance was encountered. Some historians believed Macbeth was setting a trap for the English as he moved deeper into Gaelic territory. On the 27th of July, Macbeth's forces met the invaders in Dunsinane, close to Scone between Perth and Dundee. By the end of the confrontation, more Scots, approximately 3,000, fell than the invaders, who only lost around 1,500 men. The English forces also included Danish troops. However, the outcome was indecisive. Siward retreated to England, again to his lands in Northumbria, unable to overthrow Macbeth, losing his son and nephew in the fight. Malcolm took control of Cumbria, the southernmost province in Scotland, becoming their king, and again becoming kind of the new king of Strathclyde. Just before another incursion could be launched the ensuing year, the Earl of Northumbria died. Siward died. The death of the Earl did not do little to prevent Malcolm and the English from attacking Scotland again. From about 1054 to 1057, Macbeth was under constant assault from his southern neighbour. Malcolm did not gain any support from the Scottish clans, which remained loyal to their king. However, by 1057, Macbeth had lost two supporters who could have put pressure on England to temper its support for Malcolm, Pope Leo and the Bishop of St Andrew, and the Primate of Scotland. Another loss, even more important, was that of Thorin Sigurdsson, the ruler of the Orkneys, a person who had sided with Macbeth, allowing him to gain the throne in the first place. He had also been instrumental in this. Some historians believe he was either too ill or perhaps had passed away. The end came on August the 15th, my birthday, 1057 AD, when Malcolm MacDuncan, or Malcolm Canmore's men, killed Macbeth as he tried to make it to his province in Moray with a contingent of bodyguards. His body was buried in the holy site of Iona in a ceremony worthy of a lawful king of Scotland, contrary to Shakespeare's play. All previous lawful kings were buried in this island, as we've spoke about in past episodes. Years later, when Malcolm's body was brought back to Scotland for burial, he was interred at Dunfail, thus becoming the first Scottish king to be denied interment in the Holy Isle. A few days after Macbeth's death, his son Lulach was elected High King, indicating most of the land still belonged to Macbeth's faction. Lulach ruled for 7 months until slain by Malcolm's agents. Lulach was also buried in Iona. Finally, on April the 25th, 1058 AD, Malcolm III, Malcolm Canmore, realised his dream of becoming King of Alba, the new High King of Scotland, and ruled with a successful reign. With the death of Macbeth, the Celtic Way began a steady decline. With Malcolm III on the throne, fundamental changes in the institutions of the kingdom, in the customs, the laws, and even the church took place. It is feasible to say that Macbeth, Scotland, had at last its last Celtic ruler. And the reason why Macbeth went through all these changes, which we will touch upon when we get to Malcolm III's reign, is his ties to the English nobility, including the Norman kings. His relationship later with William Rufus, for example, will be one that will help change Scotland into a more medieval feudal society than a clan-like Celtic society. King's terrified servants wrap his decapitated body in their cloaks and carry it up to the hill to a sacred site. They hastily bury Macbeth, intending to return after nightfall to transport the royal corpse to its final resting place on the holy island of Iona. In 1057, the real Macbeth was killed because he stood in the way of Malcolm Canmore, son of the previous king Duncan, claiming the throne of Alba. Duncan was hardly the meek, elderly king of the play, but rather a vicious bully who killed off his royal competition, and we're starting to see this recurrence throughout all of our contemporary sources. Macbeth, according to Irish and Gaelic sources, as we know, was fair, yellow-haired and tall, who was secure enough in his 17-year reign to make even a pilgrimage to Rome in 1050, where he scattered money like seed to the poor. Far from being a usurper, Macbeth and his wife were descendants of a previous king of Alba, Malcolm II and Kenneth III, according to some historical contemporaries. But again, this is one we're not too sure on the historical facts. It may be true, it may not be true. The Scottish play, which we are all familiar with, is in fact a total reversal of the truth, written to please James VI, who had recently become James I of the new United Kingdom. Shakespeare appealed to James's obsession with witchcraft and the supernatural, weaving a romantic origin for the Stuarts in Banquo, whom the witches prophesy, "Thou wilt get kings through thou be none." The play proved one of the most popular of Shakespeare's histories, despite it being most pro-Stuart fiction. So why did the bard get it so wrong? His main historical source, Raphael Holinshed, was relying on misleading accounts of Macbeth written over the centuries as Celtic Alba evolved into the Anglo-Norman Scotland under Malcolm III. Again, at the moment, the Kingdom of Alba and the lands of Scotland are very formed around Celtic, Pictish, Alban traditions. But under Malcolm III and his relationship with the Kingdom of England, he'll transform it into a more Anglo-Norman Scotland. And the kingdom itself will become very similar to England and less unique as it was under the Kingdom of Alba's reign. And I think when we get to Malcolm III, we're going to start referring to the Kingdom of Alba as the Kingdom of Scotland, because that's how it transforms into a different era. But we'll save that for Malcolm III's reign, if we now stay with the Kingdom of Alba. The real tragedy is these accounts were written by Scottish chroniclers from a time when the Stuart dynasty was in the ascendancy. 3 centuries after Macbeth's reign, John of Fordon's Scotochronicon describes Duncan's death in a battle as murder and invents the character of Macduff as a former friend of Macbeth. Hector Bios, principal of King's College Aberdeen, writing in the 1500s, further adds the characters of Banquo, Lady Macbeth, and states that Macbeth kills Macduff's family. Thus, the lie was complete. Macbeth's reign ended in a bloody skirmish outside when Macbeth slew him in hand-to-hand combat and cut off his head as a trophy. The queen placed her son Lulach on the throne, only for him also to be murdered by Malcolm the Canmore, Malcolm III, who finally secured the kingdom in 1058. The Carin, which served as Macbeth's temporary tomb, was excavated in 1855 and is likely to have been a prehistoric cist burial. No bones remain today. The cairn is on private land, but a quick, polite inquiry to the farmhouse Pirkhill usually ensures visitors can cross the fields to pay their respects. Which I think is quite insane if you want to go pay your respects to Macbeth. I love how Shakespeare has made this story so popular that normal people's lands that just happen to house the place where he's buried are now turning into a bit of a tourist attraction. Anyway, if we look at some different sides of Macbeth, let's look at his connection to the famous Scottish area and city as Inverness. Actually, one of my favourite places to visit in Scotland, believe it or not, Inverness. I love the travel up there. I love the area around there. I love the history around there, Fort George, all of it. I love it. But let's look at Inverness and Macbeth. In the Bard's play, Inverness was a home in Macbeth's castle, where King Duncan I is killed in the play. In the real world, his father resided in the city, but not in the currently standing Inverness Castle. Macbeth's father most likely resided in a hill fort located at Aldul Castle, known as Aldul Castle Road. It is said that Malcolm I, son of Duncan I, destroyed this fort after he defeated Macbeth. He then built a new castle on the site of the current Inverness Castle. I'm starting to realise, though, that we have progressed through time a bit slowly, which is obviously good and how I wanted it to be, considering we were doing three kings an episode and now we're finally down to being able to spread multiple kings over a few episodes. I mean, Macbeth is getting two episodes, which is great. But it also allows us to take stock of the history we are telling. But I would like us to pause here and just run through a quick timeline on our story before we end the episode today and move to the fiction of Macbeth next week. So let's look between the periods of 997 AD and 1070 AD. In 997 AD, Kenneth III begins his reign as King of Alba. He is known as the Brown-Haired One and is thought to have been the grandfather of Macbeth's wife. In 1000 AD, the end of the first millennium, Scotland, like the rest of Europe, is crippled by fears that the world will end. It doesn't. So everyone goes back to killing each other again. I wanted to put that in because that was quite funny, because obviously in the year 2000, everyone thought the world was going to have a similar ending. In 1005 AD, Macbeth, born most probably in the northeast of Scotland, his father, Finlick, is the High Steward of Moray, or the Earl of Moray, or the King of Moray. However, contemporary source depicts it as. In 1005 AD as well, Kenneth III is murdered by his cousin, Malcolm II, who then takes the throne of the Kingdom of Alba. In 1020, Macbeth's father, Finlick, is murdered by his nephews, Malcolm, who is obviously Malcolm II. Malcolm then succeeds to the throne of Moray as well. The young Macbeth swears to get his revenge. If we quickly touch on this line of detail, again, we're assuming Malcolm and Macbeth are related. They may be, they may not be. But regardless, Malcolm murdered the King or Earl of Moray, who was Macbeth's father, and conjoined the kingdoms. Both now the Kingdom of Alba and the Kingdom of Moray joined into one kingdom. In 1029 AD, Malcolm II dies, and his position of the Kingdom of Moray is taken by Macbeth's cousin. Macbeth in 1032 seizes his chance. Helped by his allies, he rounds up the cousin along with 50 others and burns them all to death, thus now succeeding to the Kingdom or Earldom of Moray, and it now separates from the Kingdom of Alba again. In 1034, King Malcolm II of Scotland dies peacefully. He is succeeded by his grandson, Duncan I, the Duncan, obviously, of Shakespeare's Macbeth. Duncan I obviously comes to the throne with Scotland a bit divided. His Kingdom of Alba has now lost the Earldom of Moray, or the Kingdom of Moray, to Macbeth. So at the moment, we have two contenders. We have the Kingdom or Earldom of Moray, which Macbeth resides and rules, and then we have our Kingdom of Alba that we know of today under Duncan I. In 1039 AD, Duncan mounts a raid of Durham, but it is a disaster, and he is chased by the Northumbrians back into Scotland. In 1040 AD, Duncan marches on Macbeth, but is killed in battle against him near Elgin. The story in Shakespeare's version that Macbeth invited Duncan to his castle and then murdered him in bed is totally fictitious. Macbeth then assumes the throne of Scotland, as well as obviously keeping hold of his kingdom of Moray. In 1046 AD, Margaret, who is to become Scotland's first female saint, is born in southern Hungary. As a child, she moves to England and settles into the English court. In 1050 AD, Macbeth goes on pilgrimage to Rome along with Thorin Sigurdsson, the Earl of Orkney. He returns to find his kingdom intact, and it was always a risky thing going on a pilgrimage, so that is quite truth of how well and how good of a ruler Macbeth was, that nothing went to shit as he left. Earl Siduit in 1054 AD of Northumbria invades Scotland. He defeats Macbeth at the Battle of Brimham Wood in Perthshire. Most of Macbeth's army are slaughtered, but Macbeth himself escapes and continues to rule his kingdom. Earl Siduit of Northumbria retreats back to his lands. In 1057 AD, Macbeth is finally killed in a battle in Aberdeenshire by Duncan's son Malcolm III. The throne is then taken by his stepson Lulloch. In 1058, Lulloch survives only a few months, being finally defeated and killed by Malcolm III at Strathbog. Malcolm III then takes the throne and is also known as Malcolm Canmore, Malcolm III. Finally, 1070, Malcolm III, or Malcolm Canmore, marries Margaret at Dunfermline. He meets her when she arrived in Scotland as a refugee and is instantly besotted with her. Their marriage is said to be an extremely happy one. Margaret introduces many of the customs of England to Scotland and carries out many acts of piety and charity. She dies in 1093 AD and is canonised in 1250 AD. But we'll touch more on Malcolm III and Margaret in their reign, because as I said and as we spoke about, they both transformed Scotland from this Gaelic, Pictish, Alban kingdom to a more modernised Anglo-Norman kingdom. Over the course of history, Scotland has had many kings. Some have been heroes, some have been villains, and some have been so useless and weak that we've forgotten everything about them. The greatest of them all, however, was Macbeth, a figure so powerful and larger than life that even now, 1,000 years later after his reign on the throne, we all still instantly recognise his name. Macbeth was a towering, dashing figure who managed to keep a grip on Scotland for a remarkable 17 years, at a time when kings were deceived, betrayed and slaughtered by their family members, as we've spoke about in previous episodes. Because he combined utter brutality with real compassion and became ordinary people saw him as a ruler who was firm but fair. He outshines even William Wallace or Robert the Bruce in terms of romantic appeal. Like Wallace, Macbeth ends up ultimately as a tragic figure, dying a hero's death on the field of battle. Yet, like Bruce, his reputation as a fighter meant he ultimately won the respect of Scotland's great enemies, the English, and obviously the people of Scotland themselves. But anyway, Macbeth's story is truly one of a great and fast rise to power and then being beaten down and killed by one of Scotland's greatest rulers to date, Malcolm III, or Malcolm Canmore. His reign may have been forever immortalised in Shakespeare's works, but the real Macbeth feel wouldn't have been held in such high regard if it weren't for that. With Malcolm III coming to the throne, all of modern day Scotland will forever stay as it is now in terms of borders, which is a great feat for Macbeth, along with the 17 years of great rule. Now, next week, let's take a break from our main story and look at the story of the fiction of Macbeth and how the story was created and told throughout the years, from the Shakespearean play to the chroniclers to the Stuarts and to our modern day interpretations. But where did things also diverge from the truth? Which, trust me, there are a lot of diverts from the truth when it comes to Macbeth's Shakespearean play. But again, thank you all for continued support on this series. Our Spotify popularity is booming at the moment, so I really want to thank you for that. As always, any corrections or issues with the podcast, please let me know at thehistoryofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com. That is historyofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com. Please review if you can, and our podcast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and many other great podcasting sites. Any reviews left on those sites, I will try to read in the next episode. But until then, as always, guys, our podcast will be next week. But until then, stay safe, have a great week, and I'll catch you all on the next one. Peace.